Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We have merged the streams here during the election season and Steelers week in the middle of the Ravens thing. And this little election we have going on right now, all of our WNST and Baltimore Positive programming brought to you by all of our original sponsors like Taharka Ice Cream. I'm holding the peanut butter cup up here. That doesn't mean that I didn't eat the Honey Graham and the Chocolate Love last night, because I did. It's almost eggnog season. And the pumpkin latte, as well as the pumpkin pie cheesecake, especially delicious right about now. Also, our friends at State Fair in Catonsville and El Guapo. My wife said, yeah, El Guapo, it's nice, it's good, tequila, but I want chicken and waffles. So we're back there for breakfast this weekend and some shrimp and grits as well. We encourage you to celebrate with our friends over in Catonsville, get some takeout, some curbside, whatever you need to do there. Our friends at Fadley's are looking forward to getting over to Catonsville. We've been visiting them down in Lexington Market, picking up the crab cakes. I'm ready for some oysters here and some oyster shooters and whatnot as well. I'll be dipping into that with my friends at Fadley's. And, of course, Moeller and Gary Realty, as they always do it. Jeff Moeller, a frequent visitor here, talking all things real estate and sometimes Lamar Jackson and Ravens offense. Don, with the election here in election week, and for the purposes of our discussion, I would say if you wake up on November the 4th and the thing's not solved, that would come as no shock to any of us. So I don't know how long this conversation will linger on, but for our purposes, it's ongoing right now. And we have some really cool guests here this week to launch the new platform.
Well, and our guest this morning, Josh Kurtz, the co-founder and editor of Maryland Matters. And congratulations, Josh, just named by the Washington Post as one of the people to follow if you want to know what's going on in Maryland politics. So thank you for being Washington Post worthy.
Well, thank you for mentioning it. It's pretty exciting, pretty fun.
Oh, that really is terrific. Josh, you've been at this a long time.
Yes.
I was actually shocked. We've known each other a long time and, you know, had many, many discussions over the years. But when I read that you started covering the State House in 1995, I thought,
yeah,
holy, wait a minute. Josh isn't old enough to have been doing this for 25 years.
Believe me, I'm old enough.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, so I say we never do straight lines here. And I wasn't going to go here, but
right.
Since you've been there 25 years,
right,
and you now are trying to make this nonprofit journalism thing work, What's changed in Annapolis and politics since you were a pup covering it down there in the State House?
Wow, that's a great question, because in some ways, not a lot has changed, because you walk around the halls and you see a lot of the same faces you saw 25 years ago. You know, some of the lobbyists are the same, some of the advocates are the same, some of the people who were in the legislature when I started are now lobbyists. So, you know, there really is like a portrait of Dorian Gray thing going on in a certain sense. But on the other hand, it's changed tremendously. You know, it's definitely become more partisan. You know, the Democrats, by and large, are a lot more liberal. The Republicans, by and large, are a lot more conservative. You know, there used to be a lot of many more people in the middle and kind of more interesting coalitions put together. Now voting outcomes are often pretty predictable and pretty partisan. And then obviously, I think the biggest thing, and that's one of the holes we're trying to fill at Maryland Matters, is just how much less coverage there is of the State House than there used to be. When I started, the Sun had a bureau of about five people who were there during every legislative session. The Washington Post had, you know, three or four. A bunch of media outlets had people there regularly, and now, unfortunately, it's a lot quieter.
Well, it's quiet in a state like this, in a place like Baltimore. We talk so much about the Baltimore Sun. And, you know, my background in the 80s was being a journalist and trained by journalists and working next to the David Simons of the world.
Right.
You know, we've had Fraser on so many times talking about the industry. And when Don says an open question like that since 1995 and me being in the business, he's like saying, what's changed in radio? Well, only everything.
Yeah.
This device, this camera we're talking into, the mic we're making work, and
right,
all of the old media is still there. Magazine, you know, we just won Best of Baltimore in Baltimore Magazine, so we think that's cool too. But then there's how we're going to hold power accountable, right? And for me, owning an AM radio station and talking about sports and, you know, having watched football teams come and go here and baseball teams threaten to come and go and stadia be built now that we can't even go enjoy. And literally it being in Baltimore and seeing the corruption, right? I mean, it feels like every week there's something. There was something literally last week in addition to the murders that we keep track of. Every time there's an election, we're looking for sort of a fresh start for all of this, I think.
Yeah.
And social media drives this. Modern media drives this to the point of cultism, which we're experiencing here in red and blue in America this week. But on a local level, holding power accountable, it would feel like there should be more of that now where everybody's holding a camera and holding videotape. And yet, you know, based on what this administration has done to try to hold on to its presidency, including holding a Republican National Convention on the White House lawn, that accountability only goes as far as whatever hat you're wearing right now.
Yeah. Well, I think that's partially true. And I think, you know, people are voting now. There's an election, you know, election day is a few days away. How do people even know what they're voting about? You know, there are complicated ballot questions on the statewide ballot and in most counties. You know, if there's no coverage of it, how do you even know what you're voting about? And you're right. You know, you mentioned the scandals in Baltimore. They wouldn't have come to light without a vigorous media, you know, following, digging, and you know, pursuing these folks.
Josh, I think that's what I find so frustrating. And, you know, certainly someone that you know well, we've had on the show a number of times, Pam Wood, was also identified by the Washington Post as one of the reporters in the state that you should be paying attention to. But her work, the work of Luke Broadwater, who's moved on to the New York Times, we're proud of Luke. We had Luke on. He's an alumnus of Baltimore Positive. What I'd like to get your take, because I think what frustrates Nestor and me, and folks who have listened to us long enough know that of the many insidious things that we believe Donald Trump has done, I put near the top of the list this attack on the media.
Yeah.
Because I think combined with the diminishing resources of local media, we're in a really dangerous moment in American history where the public's right to know, and I've always viewed the media, and folks know I've had my battles with members of the press over the years, but I think we've always shook hands at the end, went to our corners, and came out to fight another day. Right. But without that vigorous press, I'm not sure what Nestor alludes to, that corruption in the city or some little county council district or somewhere in the middle, I don't know how that comes out without an aggressive press, Josh.
Well, you're right, Don. And you know, you're right to mention the president, because he has made everything into sort of, you know, tribalism has just run rampant now. And, you know, everybody has their own, media outlets that they listen to now, and they're rarely getting the opposing view. You know, there's the old phrase, you know, you're entitled to your own opinions, but you're not entitled to your own facts. But unfortunately, now people seem to be getting their own facts too.
Well, to the point, and Nestor, I don't know if you had an opportunity to watch it or not, or Josh, but recently, you know, certainly for me, one of the flashpoints was the Leslie Stahl interview.
Yeah.
Well, actually, two. I actually saw the president this morning in a clip in one of his crazy super spreader events this week talking about how inappropriate Savannah Guthrie was and how nasty, and she was coming out of her chair and she was deranged. And I thought, and people were applauding. And I thought, geez, I watched Savannah. I thought she was quite reasonable and quite calm. And even more so was 77-year-old Leslie Stahl, who's done this for 50 years.
Right.
When my wife and I watched that, my wife actually said, she said, you know, Leslie's so polite, some people might find her even too polite. I mean, she couldn't have been more deferential or more courteous. And yet what you said, in the echo chamber, you would think that Leslie Stahl was a Tilda. Literally, smart people who live in that Fox AON echo chamber thought she was aggressive and combative. How do we move forward from this, Josh? Because I don't know how to talk to that person. I want to. Some of them are my friends and relatives. Right. I want to be able to talk to them again. But when they think that Leslie Stahl was combative, when they've watched the interview, I don't know where to go with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing I would say quickly about that interview, if you watch the whole show, I thought Nora O'Donnell asked very tough questions of Biden and Harris, too. And, you know, they didn't storm off the set. They didn't make a show right. of it. They just, you know, gritted their teeth and answered what they felt they could. And I don't know what the answer is. And that's what's troubling, because I feel like I'm not sure anyone knows what the answer is.
Well, the answer would be a population that would find that unacceptable.
Right, right.
I mean, that really is the answer. The answer is this. This needs to be unacceptable, and this is our week to do this. We're talking with the founder of Maryland Matters, the premier site for news about Maryland government and politics. We're going to get to Josh's platform and independent journalism and independent news. What does that mean? I mean, like, if I cocktail party you and you're at my table and I say, give me 5 minutes on what you're trying to do at Maryland Matters, because I've had to redefine what we're trying to do at Baltimore Positive, right. which is not give you box scores and bitch about the baseball team every morning, which is what we were founded on 25 years ago. I think everybody founds themselves on one thing, and right. then the world tells you where you're going to be. Tell me how all this came about for you.
Well, you know, as Don mentioned, I started covering Maryland in 1995 for the old Gazette newspapers in Montgomery, Prince George's, Frederick, which have since gone away, sadly. And then I stopped in 2002, and I went and took a couple of jobs reporting and editing down on Capitol Hill. But all the while, I was still doing some coverage of Maryland and some freelance gigs where I got to write about Maryland. So I never quite lost touch with everything that was going on here while I was also covering DC. And it just occurred to me, you know, as we said, that coverage of the State House, coverage of our biggest jurisdictions in Maryland was just diminishing, and that it seemed like something needed to be done about it. And so quite simply, I thought about ways of filling the void. And, you know, when we started, there were a few successful nonprofit media outlets covering state houses around the country. And I kind of just tried to duplicate what they were doing. And so we've been live now for 3.5 years, but I really started working on this in earnest in 2014 while I still had jobs in DC. And, you know, when we launched 3.5 years ago, we were still a blog pretty much for the first several months. And by the start of 2018, I had raised enough money to hire 2 full-time reporters. And by the middle of 2018, I was able to come on full time, and we've just kind of grown since. Roughly speaking, we follow the NPR model, where we get both some grants from foundations and individual donations. And, you know, I mean, I think we're too new to really say, I mean, I know we've evolved because we've grown and we've improved, and, you know, I think we're an important voice now in the coverage of the state, and that's all really gratifying. But I think the basic mission is the same, which is just, you know, inform people, hold public officials to account, and, you know, try to shed light on what's going on in places where the light isn't being shed.
Josh, how hard, what I hear and talk to, I'm fortunate to have, you know, many friends who are still in journalism or recovering journalists.
Right.
And what gives them pain, I think, and keeps them up at night is, I think they get the nonprofit journalism model. I mean, right. there's certainly an effort underway in Save right. the Sun. We've tried to cover that.
Yep.
We've had, you know, our good friends, Ten Venetopoulos and Matt Gallagher and others, Damian O'Doherty, talking about that effort. I think what people aren't sure of is whether it can be viable economically. And I know these kind of topics really interest Nestor. So talk to us about what you've learned in terms of the viability of the model now after several years.
Right. Well, you know, you're only as viable as your most generous donors allow you to be, frankly. And, you know, and it's obviously something that keeps me up at night. But I mean, at this point, I'm proud to say that we're able to support 6 full-time journalists, 1 full-time business person, and you know, and a range of sort of freelancers, you know, part-timers, interns, hangers-on, personalities, you know. And you know, do we pay as much as I would like? No. Do we, you know, offer a full benefit package? No. Can I say for sure we're going to be around, you know, forever or beyond like another year even? No, but you know.
Sounds like a little AM radio station owner.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nestor, when Josh is talking about this, I mean, this is your world, right? You understand trying to make all of this work while
I would just say this, and it always comes back to this, as a guy that's, you know, talked about sports and said positive things, negative things, happy thoughts, sad thoughts, all of that, that you're going to anger people no matter what, and certainly getting into the political space, that there are going to be people who don't like your coverage of point A or point B, but I would say in doing what you're doing, and I have often thought about this and why I would cover sports and what would be the most important part of covering the Ravens and the Orioles or the Terps or what I would cover. And then you would say the news part of covering government, and Don having sat in that seat on the media side, on the chief of staff side, and then in the seat as a county executive, when you're trying to cover something, what's more important, City Hall or County A or County B or County H, or, you know, or is the State House itself, or the federal things that are happening now? We talk about senators and congressmen and all of these, and the police and the schools and COVID and health. There's so much to cover. And I think Don and I over 2 years have tried to have these sort of hit and run conversations in all of these spaces, but to cover the law and the government and how it relates, and to understand lobbyists, it makes my head spin when I go to Annapolis and see how many people Don just knows walking through who over 25 years have in one way or another intersected. And for anyone to be trying to cover down the middle, who's getting the better end of that? God bless all of you.
It is a challenge. And before I want to jump back in just a second to something you said about the legislature, because we moved on a little too quickly. Okay. That's probably on my part, probably jumped into another topic. And there's something I want to ask you about that. But before we do, folks are out there listening now and they're saying, you know, I like this idea. I like this idea of journalism that's not beholden to anyone, where I can really go get it straight. How do they get involved and help support nonprofit journalism in Maryland Matters? Josh, let us give you a second to do that.
Yes, thank you for asking. You can check us out at marylandmatters.org. There are a couple of easy buttons on the website for you to donate by credit card electronically, if you're comfortable with that. If you're not, we gratefully accept checks, and our mailing address is on the website too. We have a post office box, and so you can do that. And I thought I'd add while I have the chance that beginning November 1st through the end of the year, contributions that are made to us will be matched by a couple of foundations. So if you give $100, it's worth $200. So that's always a great period of fundraising for us. So, and something we really appreciate the opportunity.
Josh, my ramble, because I didn't get to a question, but my question was really more about what was the most important part of covering all of that. In retrospect, that when you're setting out to do it, what's the most important
part? Well, I mean, you're right. We have to make choices all the time because there is so much going on out there. And even though saying we have 6 full-time journalists sounds like a lot, It's nothing when it comes to, you know, what needs to get covered out there.
Didn't sound like a lot to me. That's why I ask, right?
Right, yeah. But I mean, you know, clearly our base is state government and state politics. And, you know, during the legislative session, that's really where all our energies are focused.
You live down that little Quonset bunker down in the basement.
Yeah, I'm actually, we're a little worried about that, the bunker and the state of our health.
Nothing ever gets bigger in Annapolis, does it?
No.
Bester, you have to go down there. Josh will have to give you a tour. It literally is, when we say bunker,
right,
in the Sam, because all my bosses always liked to stop down there. You know, Kevin said, let's go down to the bunker.
You feel like Churchill for 5 minutes, right? Yeah.
Right.
How do you describe the bunker? How do you describe it, Josh, for our listeners?
Well, we call it the pit, actually, which, you know, that works. You know, it's just, so in the basement of the State House, there's a room, the Washington Post has a room, the Baltimore Sun has a room, there's a room for radio reporters. The Associated Press reporter has a room, but then attached to it is just like a big open space with, 15 or so desks, and people from a bunch of news outlets hang out there. So
all I'm seeing is the bottom area in the Titanic, you know, like down in the galley, right? A little
bit similar. It's luckily we're in the basement. Luckily, there is a window, like, you know, we could break through.
Speaking of the State House, and Nestor, if you ever want to know what's happening in Annapolis, you go down to the pit.
Right.
But speaking,
or
of
go
the
to MarylandMatters.org, of course.
MarylandMatters.org and pay attention to that match. Now you can really help them out if you believe in journalism. Get on there, donate. Some foundations will match that through the end of the year. So you can really make a difference. Right now is when to begin to donate. But Josh, jumping back to the State House, we've got a number of issues that we've been covering closely that we care about. But you mentioned the increased partisanship there.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine that, you know, a lot of folks listening may not be familiar with, unless you're from his district, but Republican, I would call him a conservative Republican Senator J.B. Jennings, represents part of Baltimore County, part of Harford County. Yeah. And even though, you know, J.B. and I come from different sides of the aisle and have different political philosophies, we certainly were able to work well over the years. We didn't agree a lot of the time, but you could have a really down-to-earth, try-to-find-a-middle-ground discussion with Senator Jennings, and all of a sudden I wake up and boom, Republicans have kicked him out. That's my way of saying it. Is that too over the top, or is that basically what happened, Josh?
I think that's about right. Yeah, I do.
So what happened?
Well, I think for a variety of reasons, to back up just a half step, and I should have mentioned this at the outset, you know, both legislative chambers in the past little over a year have gone through leadership changes. In the House, Speaker Mike Bush died after being Speaker for 17 years. And in the Senate last fall, Mike Miller stepped down as Senate President, and he'd held that job for a mind-blowing 33 years. So that's a major change, obviously. And so I think Senator Jennings was very close to Senator Miller personally, and they worked well together. The new leadership in the Senate, led by Senate President Bill Ferguson, I mean, Ferguson is clearly considerably more progressive than Miller was. And the sense I get is that the caucus, the Republican caucus, really wanted more of a counterpoint, and knowing that the Democratic leadership had moved to the left, and they just wanted, possibly for fundraising purposes, possibly to gin up grassroots support, they just wanted more outspoken conservatives leading their caucus, and that's what they've got now.
Josh, I've had people on both sides of the aisle down there say to me, who view themselves as moderate, self-described moderates, right, whether they're on the Democratic side or the Republican side, I'm not sure where I fit in down here anymore with the polarization. Do you hear that as you walk the halls of Annapolis?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Though, I mean, really, if you look at both the House and Senate now on both the Democratic and Republican sides, I think you'd have a hard time identifying more than a handful of true moderates at this point. I mean, obviously there's a little bit of range, but there really aren't that many any longer. And that that pace really has accelerated with the last two elections, particularly 2018. I mean, most of the moderates in the Senate are gone at this point, and that was always the more moderate chamber.
So what will they be fighting over, Josh? Nestor and I have been covering Kerwin and the Right. Built to Learn Act and the support for HBCUs, Right. all of those things near and dear to Nestor and me. We've got a looming fiscal Yeah. crisis that we're not – that experts that we bring on from Arnerbaum, Basu, and others would indicate – we're not sure. Barry Raskovar laid it out in detail. We're not sure yet state and local governments have a full understanding of how absolutely horrific this is Right. going to be. Give us – fast forward a couple of months and give us a preview to the General Assembly, which I know you'll be doing Yeah. in Maryland Matters. Give us a sneak peek.
Well, I think you've touched on a bunch of them. I think it's all, you know, there will be a fight over Kerwin and sort of school funding and kind of what school policy looks like during the extended pandemic. I mean, that's going to be one fight. You're right. The fight over HBCU funding is going to come back. I think, and you're right, there will be fiscal restraints too, but conversely, I think there is a lot of pressure for sort of now innovative and bold solutions to some of the societal problems in the state. I mean, obviously, there are going to be police reform bills, which I think have a pretty good chance of passing. But even beyond those, you know, I think there's going to be a more aggressive attempt to address climate change, for example, to address economic injustice generally. You know, I'm not sure all the tools are available because of the fiscal restraints, but Annapolis traditionally has not been a very bold place, and I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to change that now, given all the crises.
It feels to me like the minute this Biden-Trump thing is over with and we get into wherever we are and our masks and next year, we're going to then be into, oh, it's governor season again, and
Yeah.
Hogan, and here comes Francho, and here comes whom I don't know. How do you see that shaping up? Because Hogan has clearly done everything he can do to not offend anyone in a red hat for after Right. the Trump aftermath, that he should then become in the same path that our guest this week, Martin O'Malley, went on the other side, which is to try to run for president a couple years from now.
Right.
It sort of leaves a hole, right, in Maryland. And we're such a weird state in this way with Democrats and Republicans in the state house, right? That you say there is no middle. Well, it feels like there's a middle in the governor's seat because we go red, blue, red, blue, blue. You know, we've been doing Yeah. that for a little while now.
Yeah.
How do you see that shaping up in the aftermath of all of this?
Well, I think to a degree it may depend on who's president, because we're a unique state, obviously, but the national dynamic plays into the fate of certain elections in Maryland. And so, you know, if Trump is president again, which, you know, seems less likely at this point, but I'm not discounting.
We can only hope.
Yeah, well, you can say that.
We do.
Right, you do. Yes, Nestor and Don, you do. Yes. So, you know, that's one factor. We just don't know what the political dynamic nationally is going to look like in 2022. But I mean, I think it's safe to say in the Republican Party, there will be attempts to duplicate what Hogan has done in the governor's race. And then, you know, there will be a considerably more conservative push too. And I don't know which will prevail. You know, on the Democratic side, Peter Francho is already pivoting to the left. And I think most of the other candidates will be pretty progressive too, but
can Peter Francho, here's the question that I've always raised, and certainly I hear in Democratic circles, you hear it as well. I think people do not doubt that Peter Francho is a credible general election candidate.
Yeah.
Can Peter Francho survive a Democratic primary in a very blue Democratic Party in the state of Maryland?
I mean, I wouldn't put it past him because he's a very canny politician with a very good group of advisors, but I agree that he would have obstacles for sure, both institutional obstacles because the party establishment doesn't like him. And I think you're right. I think progressives are going to have a lot more sway in the gubernatorial primary in 2022 than they possibly even had in the past. So, but it also depends on who else winds up running too and how they all position themselves.
Give us three or four or five names. I know you've always been a Tom Perez fan. You and I have talked about Perez a lot. Any scenario where you see Tom drifting back into Maryland after this and dipping his toe back in the water? And then before we get out of here, give us a couple of other names to keep an eye on.
Sure. I think it's possible about Perez. I don't rule it out. You know, he's obviously got other things on his mind right now as DNC chairman. I think you have to talk about Prince George's executive, Angela Alsobrooks, who is finishing her first term. Baltimore County exec Johnny O will certainly be taking a look. He's finishing his first term. You know, a couple of names from the past are looking at it again, like Anthony Brown and Doug Gansler. The one name that intrigues me a lot is John King, the former Secretary of Education under President Obama, who is starting to get more involved in Maryland politics. And I know it's hard to sort of jump from the national arena back to Maryland when you're not very well known, but because he's a education innovator and talks a lot about closing the achievement gap and, you know, is trying to get involved in progressive politics now in the state, this may be a moment for a candidate like that. I'm not sure. I still have some skepticism, but he's an interesting guy. So, I mean, there are a bunch of intriguing possible contenders out there, and I'm not quite sure. You know, Francho has been way out front, but not quite sure when everyone else starts to dip their toes in.
So there's going to be plenty as we move forward to keep Maryland Matters busy. We hope to have you back on as a regular contributor. Again, folks, MarylandMatters.org. It's match time. If you like what they're doing, if you haven't read what Josh and his team are doing, get out to MarylandMatters.org. Make it a must read along with Baltimore Positive in the morning. Find out what's going on, but it's double match time. It's match time for them right now. Nestor, we had a smart one today.
Hey, Josh, when you have a Mueller on your podcast, he's not running for governor. Just so you know, you can take his name.
That's true.
Josh Kurtz here from Maryland Matters and MarylandMatters.org. You can find them out on the internet and all the places of social media. Follow. You can follow all of our work now at WNST.net has moved to Baltimore Positive. The Baltimore Positive now out on podcast as well as our platform and all of it sponsored by our friends at Taharka. I'm holding up the peanut butter cup, but maybe I get the mint flicks and the chills back here and the honey graham and a little caramel crunch in the back there. All in my belly now. We're going to be delivering those holiday flavors to you and telling you more about that here at Baltimore Positive. Also, big thanks to our friends at State Fair and El Guapo, now open for your tequila and margarita pleasure, as well as some nacho chips and salsa. Delicious out there, as well as our friends at Fadley's, where you can ship those crab cakes. You can make a plan now and say, I want to ship them Thanksgiving, anytime during the holidays, holiday parties, right on up to Christmas, Christmas Eve, and New Year's. They will ship them anywhere in the country at Fadley's. We have a link on the website now to do that at Baltimore Positive. Jeff Mueller is going to join us next week as well. We're going to talk about El Guapo because I haven't had him on a show since we had those nachos together over there in Catonsville. So we'll be getting him on. Mueller and Gary Realty, still selling, servicing, listing, showing, and closing deals on homes here. Find them, Mueller and Gary. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Mueller, who is not running for governor, and myself, who is just, you know, I'm just running for first place with the Ravens during a Steelers week and hoping for the best for America next week. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.